on the eve of one of the most exciting times of summer, Memorial Day weekend's upon us, when we honor those who have fought, lost their lives for this great country of ours, and who are still currently protecting this wonderful nation of ours. Some of us actually get lost in the concept, though, that it's actually the beginning of summer, the unofficial beginning of summer, because around here on the East Coast, especially the Eastern Coast Seaboard, this particular weekend is when summer actually starts. Don't look at the calendar in June. It's this particular weekend. That's because summer rentals begin and people flock by the millions into their cars and sit in endless traffic, seas and seas and seas of traffic, to go to a destination where they can dig their toes into sand and enjoy themselves for a couple days, get back in that car, and sit in seas and seas of traffic again. That's what it's all about for 3 months. And they call that summer around here. And you know what? It's worth every minute that you sit in traffic. I'm from New Jersey Shore. And actually, a couple days ago, I took a drive down by one of the areas that was hardest hit by Superstorm Sandy. And they are not out of the woods yet. It's really, really sad to see that a lot of these homes are still decimated, waiting to get federal money, waiting to get knocked down. It's pretty tragic. Even in Seaside Heights, where they had that fire last year. Seaside is a part of a major resort town in New Jersey for our listeners who are not in a tri-state area and or East Coast or international. About 90 minutes south of New York City, there was a major fire after Superstorm Sandy. And there were claims that maybe it was due to faulty wiring as a result of Superstorm Sandy, but it was not. But anyway, a good portion of the boardwalk is still unrepaired. So that's a real bummer for them because obviously they rely on heavy, heavy tourist dollars. Well, if you don't have any plans for this weekend coming up yet with the 3-day weekend with Fleet Week here. Fleet Week, I call it Meat Week. M-E-A-T. Yes, because a lot of women come around and stay around to meet their sailor for life for a 3-sweet-day-long weekend. So that's why I call it Meat Week instead of Fleet Week. But you can call it M-E-E-T Week as well. But it's great to see these guys who are serving our country having the time of their lives in the Big Apple. And again, if you haven't had made any plans for this weekend, New York City on a holiday weekend, especially Memorial Day weekend, is one of the best times to experience it. Because it's almost like a movie set. Because you have all these great structures, and they're real, but there's hardly anyone around. You see some cabs zipping here and there. There are no lines at restaurants. Very few people in major museums and things of that nature. And it's a great way to experience New York City. If it's raining, you know, less people will escape the city. But if it's nice out, the city's all yours. So come on in. De Blasio will hand you the key to the city. Maybe not so. But jump in a green cab, rent a bicycle, go around Central Park, Battery Park, do a museum, hang outside, go to the steps of St. Patrick's Cathedral, come by the lavish PRN studios to hang out. And just Jason Tubenfeld will be working here all weekend because I think Gary Null failed to tell Jason that, right? Jason, he's learning this for the very first time that he's working all weekend. Our program director here at PRN. So anyway, you can come by and meet Jason. But it's a lot of fun to be here this particular weekend. And so this morning I woke up with a tune in my head. And you may or may not know it because it hasn't been out for that long. Called Fancy. It's got a heavy bass line. It's by Iggy Azalea. And I am kind of laying my money on this song to be the song of the summer. I'm not saying I like it, but I think that's the way we're headed. I think the close number one place could go to Timberlake, Justin Timberlake, and Michael Jackson. Of course, there's a lot of nostalgia there, and Justin obviously is an icon of certainly current day. But the song of the summer, man, that's a big deal. I mean, people really like to predict it. And, I mean, the song of last year, Daft Punk, I think just got out of my head and stopped looping about a month ago. But, you know, Get Lucky. But that was a great song. But summers are very, very special for most people because, you know, it brings you back to your childhood and all those important things you did and fun things you did. And remember those endless summer days when you were a kid? they seem like they would never, ever end. You'd be sitting inside saying like, oh my God, it's too hot. We'd be playing for hours upon hours outside. And you'd come in and you'd be like, oh my God, I'm so bored after you've done everything underneath the sun. that was me as a kid. Endless energy, but the days seem so long. Not like nowadays where you wish there were 48 hours in one day because you can't even accomplish half the stuff you need to do. So if you're like me, you're going to be sticking your toe in a big in the sand this weekend, or the big drink, the Atlantic Ocean, or maybe another ocean, depending on where you're listening, or a lake. You may think about, wow, how good that person looks in a bathing suit next to you. Probably that's your first thought. Or maybe how good I look in a bathing suit because you work so hard during the winter to keep that mad, crazy, hard body of yours in shape. Or possibly maybe half an hour later, think about, where does this water come from? Is it clean? In the Jersey Shore area, not so much in the last decade, though. It wouldn't be uncommon, and I don't mean to freak you out, but it wouldn't be uncommon if you saw, yes, a dirty diaper floating by. Or, even worse, a syringe. This has happened. I'm sure you read about it. We're not the only ones in this part of the world that have had things of that nature happen. And it does happen. And they obviously took a lot of regulations to major, fuller extents about dumping off the shores, which it's unconscionable to think that, you know, a barge would be dumping loads and loads, tens and tens of thousands of loads of garbage into our great ocean. But it still happens, but I guess out of sight, out of mind, right? But anyway, so I was thinking about that and in terms of the oncoming weekend, Memorial Day weekend, again, the unofficial start of summer, where everyone flocks down, goes to the beaches, even if the water is cold. The water is probably only about 65 degrees now, especially with the rain predicted happening today and Friday and Saturday. But we'll still get a Sunday and Monday. So half the Memorial Day weekend will be salvaged. But you think about these things, and so our second half of the show on Insight today, we'll be talking to the executive director of Clean Water Action. Another thing certainly associated with summer is cycling. I mean, when I was a kid, I could never, ever pull myself off a bike, unless there was a really good cause, like maybe ice cream, a cute girl, or my parents saying, you better get off that goddamn bike, kid, now. Because, especially being visually impaired, there weren't a lot of things I could do. I wasn't playing a lot of sports because I couldn't compete. I couldn't be like the other kids in terms of seeing the baseball, football. I couldn't play because I couldn't take a blow to the head. I could have a detached retina. And that's one of the things I speak about is overcoming adversity in one of my national speaks talks that I give to high schools and colleges, etc. And so, you know, biking was really, really important to me. It defined me. And it was interesting because when people turned 17, all my friends in high school are like, oh my God, I can't wait till such and such date. I get my driver's license. And that is a rite of passage for everybody. Totally, totally cool. But even before that rite of passage, it's the bike that gives you that ultimate freedom. When you throw your leg across that bike and you lose your training wheels, and that's an apropos phrase we're going to get to in a moment, you experience firsthandedly what it is to leave everything behind. And it's almost like flying on land. That's how I explained it back then. Well, not so eloquently. Not that that's very eloquent, but. And then you leave someone else and something behind. Your family and your house. There, if you had a rear view mirror on your bike, you're gone. You're like your own entity for a while. And that's pretty cool. Your first experience of freedom. So for me, that was really big. And going to the 17th birthday, I knew I wouldn't get my driver's license because of my visual impairment. So when everyone else got their driver's license, and I was totally psyched about that because then I had rides, didn't have to rely on mom and dad, I never got off the bike, which was a cool thing in many aspects because it allowed me to obviously stay very fit. And it kind of defined me as Mark, as the guy on a bike who would never, ever not be deterred to travel 20 miles to go to the beach one way on the bike to Manasquan Beach, which everyone went to. A little harder on a ride home because obviously you're under the sun all day long and you're a little beat. So sometimes I'd get a ride home halfway home and someone graciously would put my bike in the back of their car. But anyway, I really, really enjoyed it. And then I got into doing bike races later in life in college. And triathlons. And there's a great story I tell about when I do my first triathlon and I get to the water's edge and I realize that I can't see the swim course. and I'll happily explain that story to you another day. But right now, I heard of an organization not too long ago called I Can Shine. I, almost like the iPhone app brand, small I, Can, C-A-N, Shine. And they are formerly titled Losing the Training Wheels, Lose the Training Wheels. And that really rung a bell for me. I was like, wow, what a great concept. Because what they're doing is teaching persons with disabilities how to ride a bike. And I thought to myself, wow, really neat. Because think about, you know, first of all, we think about people with disabilities like a lot of people have empathy, sympathy, like poor Sally or poor Jim. You know, it's a shame they're not part of the normal, I hate to say normal fabric of everyday life. They can't participate in a lot of things. But you think about school and you think about the social ramifications, but biking is certainly a part of that. And so when I read up about I Can Shine, I said, well, I need to have the executive director, Lisa Rubion, to share just how this organization started. Lisa, how are you, my friend?
I am terrific. How are you doing, Mark?
Well, I guess you realize how much biking played an important role in my life now, huh?
I do, absolutely. I think it, especially in the United States, it is a rite of passage for all kids to learn to ride a bike and experience that joy and freedom you were talking about.
How important was cycling for you as a youngster?
It was everything. You know, I grew up during a time when everybody rode a bike. And, you know, the minute we got home from school, we were on our bikes. And we stayed on our bikes until it got dark. All the kids in the neighborhood, you know, my siblings and myself. And, you know, it was a way of life back then. So super important for me when I learned how to ride and be independent and free. Free from my parents.
And I'm sure you can vividly recall. Oh, absolutely. Let's leave them behind. I'm sure you can vividly recall, Lisa, the color of your bike. Was it banana seat, sissy bars,
yep.
baseball cards in the spokes?
Yep. And it had streamers on the handlebars. You
that's
know, had
right.
The hanger handlebars. Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. So now you're formerly Lose the Training Wheels. Now it is I Can Shine. Great name. Great branding. I love it. And
Thank you.
And you serve mostly teenagers, young adults with disabilities. And how did the epiphany happen for you to say to yourself, wow, a lot of these individuals don't know how to ride bikes, and this is going to be my new mission in life?
Actually, I started with the organization before we were even a nonprofit. And the adapted equipment that we use in the program design was created by a mechanical engineer. He was a professor at the University of Illinois named Dr. Richard Klein, and he just created this as a way to teach people to ride bikes and really just sort of fell into the niche with the disability community as a way to learn. And I saw it. First time I saw it, I had never seen anything like that. I'd been working in adapted recreation for many years and had never seen anything that in 5 days, 75 minutes a day, could teach someone from start to beginning how to actually accomplish a life skill, you know, in under 6.5 hours. And I was just amazed. And I knew right away that I wanted to be part of it and quit my job and hopped on board. And we got the nonprofit rolling. And, you know, here we are today. 8 years later, we're in, this year we'll be in 84, we have 84 camps this summer across North America. We're in 34 states in the U.S.
And you actually have some locally right here in Hoboken, New Jersey, right across the water?
Yes, we do.
And in Monmouth County, Brookdale College?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If your listeners go on our website, they can look at our website map. It's a map of the United States and Canada, and they can see where all of our programs are this year. But we're very blessed. Last year we served about 3,000 people with a variety of disabilities, age 8 and above. A lot of teens and young adults come to learn, and 80% of them were independently riding by the end of the 5-day program.
Fantastic. What are the facial expressions like, Lisa? I mean, these kids must be over the moon.
Oh yeah. I can't describe it. It's amazing. It's one of the reasons we changed the name of our organization to I Can Shine, because if you've never seen anybody accomplish something that they've dreamed of for a long time and that everybody else does and they're not able to do, and it makes them so different. They really do shine, and it's just, it's amazing to witness the transformation from the day they walk in the door and they're so scared and anxious and, you know, maybe they've failed at this activity in the past or just recreational activities in general. And to see them transform over those 5 days and just become someone who is not only confident in riding a bike, but in every aspect of their life, I mean,
sure.
This really spills over into everything for them. And, you know, all the parents are crying and the grandparents are crying and it's very emotional, very, very touching. It really is. It's a lot of the parents have been told by their medical professionals that their child would never ride a bicycle. And it's a grand moment. I really, really highly recommend it for everybody. Anybody who wants to volunteer, anybody who wants to see people shine and just shine in their reflection. Definitely recommend it.
Now, you mentioned the engineer Klein. Two questions here. Klein, there's actually a major high-end line of bicycles called Klein. Any relation?
No relation.
Okay.
Nope.
And secondly, modifications are made to bicycles, but how do you assess whether an individual is suitable to even attempt based on their disability, riding a bike?
It's very broad. We require that the rider is at least 8 years old because we found that for children younger than 8, they're just not developmentally ready. Mm-hmm. And it's very intense. It's only 5 days and, you know, 6.5 hours total. So, you've got to be at least 8. You have to have a disability. This is not for typically developing, children or adults. You have to be at least have an inseam of 20 inches to fit on our smallest adaptive bike, and you cannot weigh more than 220 pounds, and that's for our largest bike. And then as far as the disability, Mark, we the only disabilities we really cannot support and are not good candidates for our program are people that are not ambulatory.
Mm-hmm,
so if you can't walk, you know, when that bike stops, it's going to tip to one side or the other, and you have to be able to put your feet down and support yourself in that bike. So really, that's it. We have had, we've had many visually impaired participants in our program that have learned to ride, people that are legally blind. And, it's amazing. It's really amazing for them.
Well, and there's so much they can actually do with that because anyone who's watched the Paralympics or knows about competition for people who are visually impaired or blind with bicycles, they are actually called the stoker in the back, and you have a pilot in the front. So they could go on to do great things. They could be actually a professional cyclist. And
absolutely.
One day, Lisa Ruby, executive director of I Can Shine, maybe one of your athletes or multiple disabled athletes of yours could be in the Paralympics. How would that make you feel?
Amazing. That would just, amazing. That would, you know, make my mission complete here, really. It would be incredible. We do hear, Mark, about some of our kids that come in, you know, as 12, 13 year olds learn to ride and progress to be, you know, we've got a trail rider in Colorado. He's a mountain biker now. We've got kids, we had a young man, 15 years old, that just participated in the, Five Borough Tour. That learned to ride in our Hoboken camp 2 years ago. And it's just amazing for us to watch these kids and what happens to them and how they take off after they learn to ride a bike. It's very gratifying.
And I saw that video, Lisa. He was on the 59th Street Bridge or Triborough Bridge, I'm not sure, and he was just elated. I mean, you could see the cityscape in the background, and here is this young man just being a normal kid riding a two-wheel bike.
Yep. I like to think of biking as the great equalizer.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
When we're riding a bike, all the disability part just disappears, and we're all just people riding bikes.
Unless you're Lance Armstrong, then you're subhuman.
There you go.
Sorry. I saw an open window there. I had to take it. I'm a bicyclist enthusiast, and he just still pisses me off to this day. Anyway, he's a liar, and I don't like liars. So now where are you getting this equipment from? Is it donated, the bikes, the helmets, the modifications? I mean, this all costs dinero.
Yes, it does. No, Dr. Klein actually continues to provide the equipment for us. He makes it all, manufactures it, and we lease the equipment from him. This year we have 12 different fleets of bikes, which means that we can be in 12 different cities and states across North America, or provinces in Canada, with our staff running 12 different bike camps. So, it is quite an effort. It's quite something mm-hmm. to fund. We do, you know, we are a nonprofit organization, a 501c3, and like all good nonprofits, we struggle with funding. And I also invite your listeners to, you know, get on board with that. We're partnering with a group in, they're originated out of DC. It's called Bike to the Beach. And, they have 4 charity rides this summer. One is in New York, one is in DC, Baltimore, and Boston. And we partnered with them to become a national partner so that some of the money that they raise will be donated to I Can Shine so that we can sustain our mission and expand. You know, we want to grow. We want
absolutely.
More kids on bikes.
We need more
all
wheels. No, more wheels.
Yeah.
And the
absolutely.
New York ride is happening on June 6th, right around the corner.
That is correct.
And starting right here on the island of New York, and it's going out to West Hampton Beach, one of my beautiful favorite places. And you have a great, excited team, I Can Shine team, and they're
yep.
obviously riding to raise lots of money for everyone. And that's a century ride. That's 100 miles. Or you could think about it, or it may take you a century to finish. Depends how what condition you're in. Both
that's
synonymous
right.
terms, exactly. So let me ask you this, Lisa. Well, also, before I shy away from that, the bike ride, again, we mentioned June 6th. If you want to find out more about that, go into icanshine.org, icanshine.org. You can also read about the other rides in D.C., Baltimore, and Boston as well. So now, if I'm John Doe and I want to teach kids how to ride a bike through I Can Shine, what is involved?
So would you like to be, so the way it works, let me explain it sort of at a high level. The way it works is we certainly couldn't do this by ourselves. There's no way. There are only 2 full-time employees in our organization, and we hire about 28 people, throughout the year that are seasonal employees that go out and run our bike camps for us. But we partner with organizations in their community. And the host organization secures the indoor and outdoor riding area. They recruit the riders in their community, and they recruit the volunteers that work with the kids in their community as well. And then we send our staff and our equipment. It's a truck pulling a trailer, you know, 7-by-18-foot trailer full of stuff. And we show up, and we unload it, and we run the camp for them for the week. And then we load it all up and head off to the next town. It's a little like a bike circus, if you will.
I love it. I love it. So what's involved logistically? You need just a wide open area, indoors preferred?
Well, our adapted equipment, and I invite everyone to go online onto our website and take a look at it. There's lots of videos with our adapted equipment, our trainer bikes. They're called roller bikes, and you can see how they work. But those bikes only work on an indoor flat surface, like a gym, mm-hmm. gym floor. And then as our riders go to 2-wheel bikes, then we go outside to like a nice open parking lot, high school running track, outdoor basketball courts or tennis courts, you know, those sorts of nice areas to transition them to that environment. Because even that little transition may seem like not much, you know, but it is huge for our riders. It's a big deal.
Oh, there's a lot more variables outside. You have distractions. You have the elements of being outside,
yeah.
A lot of different things. Lisa Ruby is my guest.
That's where they're going to ride on Saturday once they leave us. So
absolutely.
We really want to do that for them. And we also ask them to bring their family bikes in, and we just want to do that transition to their family bikes. So we
great
know
concept.
They're comfortable, that we've got a bike that fits them, that it's an easy bike to learn to ride on, and that the parents have a plan on Saturday when they get out.
Lisa Ruby is my guest. She's the executive director of I Can Shine. They have a lot of different programs. One of the programs we're talking about is their biking program for children with disabilities starting at age 8. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on PRN, Progressive Radio Network. Love to hear from you. 888-874-4888. Maybe you have a very interesting story about when you first learned to ride a bike, or maybe you had never learned to lose the training wheels. 888-874-4888. Lisa, very quickly, tell me about the other programs I Can Swim and other programs you're developing.
The next program for us is going to be I Can Swim. It's a program that we've had many requests for with our current customers, our current host. And It's another lifetime skill, like biking. It's something that you can do when you're 80 years old, you know, and you can do it with a group or you can do it on your own. And it also has that safety factor. You know, you could be in a boat and you could fall over. You need to know how to swim enough to keep yourself safe. And, you know, where I live in the D.C. area, there are many services for people with disabilities, and there are a lot of swimming programs here, adapted swimming programs. But that's not so around the country. So that's our next program. It's going to be I Can Swim, and our goal is to go into the community and partner with our host organization, run a swim camp. But during the swim camp, we're also going to train people that are certified to teach swimming, train them how to be adapted aquatics instructors so that when we leave, they can continue weekly adapted aquatics classes in their community and build some good, strong swimmers.
You mentioned about the gentleman who rode over the took part in the five-borough bike tour in New York City here a few weeks ago, who learned to bike in your iBike program. Mention another story, please, a very positive story that maybe someone had a lot of difficulty and they got over that hurdle and they're off on their way now riding.
Yes, it's. I'll tell you a story about a young man in Charlotte, North Carolina, and he came to us. I think he first learned to ride when he was 13, and his name is Jake, and he had been trying to learn to ride for, I think, 8 years with his parents and had been unsuccessful learning to ride on two wheels. And of course, you know, you're 13 years old and it's embarrassing to be on training wheels, and most training wheels won't even support you when you're that large. Yeah, so, but there's also a stigma about being seen in your neighborhood when you're 13 trying to learn to ride a bicycle.
Well, the same could be said when you're 30 years old living at home.
True.
You know, you're kind of like living with the training wheels on.
That is correct. Absolutely. Great analogy. But, you know, Jake went on, came to our camp. And when he was 14, learned to ride a bike, and then I received a letter, email from his mother when he was 20 years old, and she said, you know, I'm sitting here at my kitchen table drinking a cup of coffee, watching my son as he puts on his bike helmet and his backpack, gets on his bike. He's going to ride 3 miles to catch the city bus, which will take him to the local community college where he has just started to attend classes. And I realize how much this has changed our lives, not just his life, but our lives completely, and made him an independent young man.
Go, Jake.
I know. Isn't
that's
that cool?
Great. That's totally cool. Great? Unbelievable. And not only that, on multiple levels, he's embarking on a mode of transportation that he tried for so long to master. And then he's actually taking it to a destination where he's becoming a more informed, educated person.
Isn't that great?
That is great on multiple levels. Wow.
I'll tell you another thing. You know, we do after school programs as well, and we spend about an hour and a half with the, we call them volunteer spotters. They're students that come out to work with the riders as they learn to ride to keep them motivated and to keep them safe, you know, as they ride. And I'll tell you that one of the things that's beautiful about what these students, typically developing students, get out of this week is that they tell us at the end of the week things like, I can't believe, you know, how determined my rider was. I mean, most of us, my friends, would have given up on Wednesday. We wouldn't have kept going because it was so difficult for them. But something that I recognized during the week about children with disabilities is that they don't give up. It's challenging, but they're not going to give up. They're determined to make it happen. And,
they're resilient, very resilient.
Yeah, so I think that's a wonderful thing for our students in that teenage generation to recognize about, their peers that have disabilities. That,
and Lisa,
you know,
you may be well aware of this, that these young children who have disabilities and who persevere at such a young age, their motto or work ethic or drive does not change. They grow up to be adults. And this is statistically proven, their job performance rate and absenteeism rate is incredible. They're so dedicated.
Absolutely.
So if anyone is out there looking for to donate to a great cause, great organization, iCanShine.org, iCanShine.org, possibly doing a program in your area, Lisa, is your information on your website?
Absolutely. Or if you'd like to volunteer, mm-hmm. please do that. We love to have folks come out and work with our kids during the week to help them learn how to ride. And I promise it is an experience you will not soon forget. It is it's something that many of our volunteers come back year after year to their local bike camps. But
especially this time of year, Lisa Ruby, you see a lot of people putting bikes out to the curb. Is that a form in which people can help donate bikes?
You know, you could contact the local organizations to donate bikes to them. We do not have that capacity mm-hmm. for, you know, storing and distributing the donated bikes. But sure, you know, you could, if you go on our website again and look at that website map and contact, there's contact information for your local bike camp. Get in touch with them and see if they would like a gently used bicycle for their riders that couldn't afford a bike. That'd be terrific.
Lisa, I'm not sure if you're watching via our webcam in the studio here on PRN.FM, but our jokester colleagues here that I work with, one of them is holding up a sign to the studio that says, "I can drink." So maybe there's another program. And I can default on my mortgage.
I don't know if we're going to teach people that one.
No. It's actually unfortunate. It's one of those things you have to discover and learn and experience all on your own as an adult.
That's right. That is correct.
Lisa Ruby.
You know, we've actually had families request an I Can Cook class, so perhaps we could have an I Can Drink to go along with the I Can Cook.
Yes, I can make my own wine. I'll sign up for that
go.
One. Hey, Lisa Ruby, great work. Really stellar work, and you're really impacting a lot of lives, and that should make you sleep really well at night.
Thank you so much, Mark. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and your listeners.
Have a great holiday weekend now.
Hey, you too.
When Insight returns on PRN.FM, we're going to find out how good is that water that's in your backyard, your ocean, your lake, wherever you live. Up next on PRN.FM. You got big plans this weekend? 3-day weekend. This is actually my favorite weekend of the year because it reminds me of my single, wild, crazy days, which some of you have heard about if you are a faithful Insight listener here. My debauchery spent down the Jersey Shore on the island of New York City here. I left my mark on many a bar, and I'd say many a bar across the nation and internationally as well. With my drinking antics for years and years and years. But anyway, Memorial Day weekend always makes it a special time for me, even though that I have a wife and two kids now. It always gives you that feeling of like, you know, anything's possible. You got 3 months of nice, intense heat, swimming, barbecuing, chilling, cold beers, drinks, hamburgers, hot dogs, bikinis, and bikinis. Yeah, I got stuck there for a second. But wherever you are this weekend, chances are most of you, whether you're on the West Coast, middle of the country, there's a lake, international listeners don't celebrate Memorial Day weekend, but certainly it's something to ponder about the water where you are, whether it's the water you swim in, the water you drink, or maybe even the water you wash your car with. Who knows? But I think about that recently because I have a 4-year-old son who's turning 15, I think, tomorrow because he asks so many intelligent questions. I think that's my own fault because I tell him too much information. But when we turn the faucet on, he's like, "Yeah, Dad, so this is coming from the pipe. It's going to the street. It's going to the main. It's going to the reservoir, which goes to the filter, which goes to..." So he knows all this. But we take a lot of this for granted. You know, where does water come from? And we use an immense amount of it wastefully. So it makes me think about, of course, summertime, a lot of us spend a lot of time in water. So where is this water coming from and how good is it? So coming from the Clean Water Action Organization out of New Jersey is the executive director, and she's my guest right now, Amy Goldsmith. Amy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Is this one of your favorite weekends as well, being a New Jerseyan?
Well, it's always exciting to see the opening summer season. Right?
Absolutely. Have you gotten your beach badge?
Nope, I haven't gotten it yet, but there's always time to do that.
Very, very quickly for people who don't live in a tri-state area, and people get bewildered and just confused by this. We actually have to buy badges, which are basically like tickets to go onto the beach for the season. It's mm-hmm. extremely, a public access beach we have to buy. Anyway, another topic, another time, but
yes,
that's where we are.
Topic. I could go on and on for that
yeah,
one, too.
Could. So, Amy Goldsmith, how does our water rank in New Jersey, our drinking water and or our oceans?
Well, at the moment, we're sort of holding steady, but we could keep going in decline with the current administration in Trenton, but we see that the EPA is stepping up to the plate.
So. In what fashion?
Well, actually, they're proposing some new rules that would clarify what waters of the United States and New Jersey should be protected, as was written in the Clean Water Act in 1972.
So they're redefining that. So that has a lot of implications, I imagine.
Yeah. There's been the simple way to say it is that there's been confusion, but the problematic answer to that is that many, many waters in New Jersey and throughout the United States go unprotected because of this confusion in the definition of what is a waterway protected under the Clean Water Act and what's not. And these waters are streams, rivers, reservoirs, ponds, natural ponds, wetlands, the headwaters, the waters that feed our drinking water supplies. And in New Jersey alone, over 1,100 miles of these streams are currently unprotected.
Wow.
Without this clarification.
So two things, Amy. I think you're going to need to define protected in an umbrella sense, because then we'll understand more importantly how the unprotected waters would be or could be affected.
Right. Well, waters get protected in a number of different ways. We have waters in New Jersey, over 4,000 miles of these streams and reservoirs that get protected so that we don't build too close to waterways that are essential for drinking water, that are essential for trout, which are, for a time in New Jersey, were more protected than people in our drinking water supplies. They protect our recreational areas and our beaches, but they also are incredible buffers to the floods that we get. If we had had more wetlands protected in New Jersey, maybe some parts of New Jersey and New York would not have been hit as hard by Hurricane Sandy.
Interesting.
Because wetlands are a natural buffer. They absorb water, and also they're a natural filter for toxics.
And they're actually very pretty, too.
Yes, they are, and they attract a lot of wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the place where many of the fish lay their eggs, so it's really the hatchery for the fisheries industry, whether it's recreational or commercial, which is very big in New Jersey.
So now all this unprotected area could be damaged due to all those unregulated areas.
Right, and just to be clear, these definitions would basically clarify what was originally intended and was protected before 2001. In 2001, there were some court decisions, another one in 2006, and then George W. Bush used some administrative powers to basically keep the EPA from enforcing the law as it was originally written. So we're not actually protecting new waters.
Mm-hmm.
We're just protecting the waters as they were intended.
You're protecting the otherwise protected waters that were redefined. So
it's,
now why did he do this, Bush?
Bizarre,
because was
true.
This a precursor to fracking back then?
No, fracking is sort of on a whole nother trajectory, and fracking is covered not just by the Clean Water Act, but remember, fracking is it's a groundwater problem. The Clean Water Act covers surface waters, so it's covering, you know, streams, wetlands. It's not covering wells, aquifers, those kinds of things.
So, just going back to George Bush, because I'm not understanding it. Why did he do that then?
Well, you know, we've had administrations that have been good on the environment and some not as well, as good. And George W. Bush is one of those people who decided to, you know, give more to polluters, more leeway to polluters. And by changing some of the administrative powers of the EPA, it prohibited the EPA from enforcing the law as it was intended. It resulted in less protection, and also less fewer permits, but also when the permits were issued, there was more confusion about the permits. So it took longer. They were more expensive, you know, on both sides, not just for environmentalists.
Sure. A lot of red tape.
It wasn't correct. It was more expensive for businesses. And so interestingly enough, even developers and industry people, along with environmentalists and wildlife protectors, joined together and said, please, we beg you, EPA, clarify our protection so we know what's exempt, what's not. And again, we're going back to what was originally written.
Sure.
1972. You know, in the clean, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, when I went on your website, cleanwateraction.org, I was just amazed about all the information. But at the same time, and I don't want to sound naive here, but I never realized how much there is to just a basic but essential aspect of life, water, in terms of just protecting and or ensuring that it is safe.
That's right. And also people should know that while we often talk about, you know, wars over oil, and there continue to be wars over oil and fossil fuels, the next war or the next oil is water. And as climate change occurs, water will become ever more precious for, you know, the Garden State, which relies on water, fresh water for agriculture and the marvelous food we make here, but also for us to be able to sustain ourselves or to make the food at Goya or make the beer at Anheuser-Busch in Newark. So it's very essential to our
existence, sure, and economy, sure. Amy, is it safe to say a lot of your day and or year for Clean Water Action is spent on legislation and protection?
We do work on legislation, both in the State House and at the federal level, because we are part of a national organization. But we also do a lot of work in Newark and in communities around minimizing whether it's exposure to toxics like pesticides or chemical fertilizers, which also end up in our waterways. We did get legislation passed in that regard, but then we worked to implement those laws at the ground level. So just getting a law passed does not mean it actually goes into effect. In fact, when the Clean Water Act was first passed in 1972, there was never a dime allocated to it for the first 4 years, so it essentially didn't exist. So you can't just pass a law and walk away. You have to be there, as we are 40 years plus later, to make sure that it is adhered to, that it's supported by science, and it has a legal foundation so that we can confidently and properly, you know, protect our waterways.
Amy Goldsmith of Clean Water Action, you just mentioned Newark, and I'm glad you did, because just the other day, it was revealed that the drinking water in Newark was not safe or could not have been safe for the last 4 or 5 years. Is this correct?
Well, I haven't read all the materials on this, but Newark actually, like New York City, gets water from very pristine water supplies, in our case from the Highlands, from New York City, it's in the Catskills. And what's so essential is that we protect the source water at the reservoir, but also protect the infrastructure and the pipes along the way. So many of New Jersey and Newark in particular's pipes are, in some cases, 100 years old. They're made with bricks. They leak, water goes in, water goes out, and also there's lead pipes and lead solder, you know, in the faucets. So there are many places along the path where drinking water for Newark, becomes vulnerable. But the Clean Water Act protects it at that headwater, at the starting point, where that water, you know, it's being stored in the reservoirs, but also the feeder streams that feed into the reservoirs. We can't do much control about the rain coming down that fills the reservoir, but we can control what feeds into it, including the Passaic River, which is a secondary water supply for Newark. And in drought, the Passaic River is almost 100% treated sewage. That's the water that is in that river when we have drought like we did several years back. And so that water keeps getting recirculated through its treatment plant, through its drinking water treatment plant, back into your tap, down the toilet or wherever it, you know, is going, down the sink, then it recirculates. So again, it's so vitally important that we protect the waters, but
I wish you didn't tell me that
right
part.
Permits for the sewage treatment plant, which the Clean Water Act.
I got a real visual. I got a real visual on what you just said, Amy, and I have to say that lunch is going to have to wait a while.
Yeah, right. Well, and imagine all the unregulated contaminants.
I cannot.
Like, you can go from Viagra to, you know, blood pressure mm-hmm. pills. So that goes in the water, and treatment plants can't treat for that. So
well, that may explain a lot. I should tell my wife this. I need to drink more water because things are very possible.
Anything is possible.
Oh, absolutely.
Drink water from the Passaic River.
Now, yeah, you got that right. You never know. Maybe Jimmy Hoffa is possible down there too. With Clean Water Action, we focus on fracking, drinking water, pesticide mm-hmm. and fertilizer free waterways. I mean, that's a big mm-hmm. thing, huge runoff. And I don't think enough people realize how much damage they're doing to not only their property and to their family and members mm-hmm. who are living on the property, but to their community around them.
Right. I mean, if you know the little flags that you see in front of people's lawns that mm-hmm. says, you know, pesticides applied here, where our organization decades ago got that law passed. So at least it provides you with a right to know about whether you want to cross.
It should say. It should say. Run!
Don't let your dog here. Don't let yourself or your kids go here. So, in some cases, we provided a right to know. In other cases, you can go on our website, and there's actually, if you have a neighbor who's misapplying pesticides, or you have questions about it and your health is concerned, whether it's indoors or out, there is actually a pesticide right to know law in New Jersey that you can get that information, and you can come to our organization and say, well, they're using this and this. Is there some alternative they could do instead? So there are many alternatives available, and there is a fertilizer law now in New Jersey to reduce all those nutrients that end up causing the algae blooms, causing the fish kills, as we've seen, in Shark River and along our mm-hmm. waterways. So reducing the amount of fertilizer that goes on our waterways, you know, spot treating or not using chemicals at all, and still being able to have that aesthetic lawn if that's really what you want. We have many school districts around the state who are now gone organic on their playing fields in order to protect kids, in addition to protecting the water supplies
Fantastic.
That run in underneath them. So,
and that must have been some feat, trying to change something in the education system.
Right. Well, it's when people know things a certain way, you know, and they've always done it this way and it's always worked for them, it is hard to teach people new tricks. But the reality is that there are places like Mahwah and East Orange who are doing organic and
That's great.
Have great fields, you know, and their football players aren't getting injured and their soccer players aren't getting injured. All of those things are good things for the environment, but also good things.
Especially when you do a face plant.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you do a face plant in a field.
Yes.
So I guess it's fair to say, Amy Goldsmith, you don't have stock in Monsanto.
No, we don't take money from Monsanto. We don't take money from utilities and polluters. That gives us the ability to be independent of them. And we also have a door-to-door community outreach work that we do every day. And so we have over 150,000 members in the state of New Jersey, 75,000 email alert subscribers. And this gives us the power to, you know, not just go after polluters, but also work with people who want to do the right thing and have them serve as role models for the future.
So if we've gotten all our PRN listeners in the Tri-State area, especially in New Jersey, very interested, and they're very dying to knock down some doors in the capital of New Jersey, the fine place of Trenton, New Jersey, they can do so on June 12th for the Clean Water Action at the New Jersey State House. And tell us more about that quickly.
Well, we're having a lobby day. We are trying to, we've moved the legislature to vote to ban frack waste from New Jersey. as many people know, New Jersey's often the dumping ground for others. And so they've actually brought frack waste and put them through our sewage treatment plants in the past, unbeknownst to us at times. And we want to stop that.
So they're being compensated.
Voted against it once.
They're being compensated to do that. That's why they're doing it.
Excuse me?
These companies are being compensated to put it through the water treatment plants? Is that why they're doing it?
I mean, they're bringing it. They're paying, you know, but then the sewage treatment plants aren't geared to deal with this stuff. You know, there's radioactive isotopes in it. There's unknown chemicals in it. So we're going to go to the State House to get the Assembly to vote the way the Senate just did, 33-4. And we want to put it back on the governor's desk. The governor's already vetoed it once. We want to put it back on the governor's desk, and then we want to challenge him and the legislature.
To come to the Passaic River and drink.
To come to the Passaic River and drink, but more importantly, we want to challenge them, the governor, not to veto it, but if he does, for the legislature to do the override, which is the right thing to do for New Jersey.
Well, sounds like the odds are pretty good. Well, you never know with Chris Christie.
It's pretty good to get it passed in the legislature. I would doubt, unfortunately, that the governor will sign it as he continues to veto and conditionally veto most any environmental policy that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to make sure that we show our presence to the legislature to then override the governor.
Good stuff, good stuff. And this is on your website?
Yes, it's all on our website at cleanwateraction.org. And you can either go to the state and click on New Jersey, or you could just put a /NJ at the end of cleanwateraction.org.
Amy Goldsmith.
And come down.
Yes, come down. Go to the fine capital of New Jersey. Amy Goldsmith, you're going to be spending your Memorial Day weekend seaside?
Might be seaside, or, you know, there's lots of
or
things
bar
to do
side.
Here in New Jersey.
Yes, exactly.
You can be inland or on the water.
Fantastic.
At the beach. So
keep doing
we'll see how the weather goes.
Keep doing the stellar work you're doing at Clean Water Action, because every time we drink a cup of water or take a shower or wash our car, it's you and your fine organization to thank as well.
Oh, thank you so much for calling, and thank you so much for being out there and doing the work that you do on the radio.
Our pleasure, our pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Take care now.
Okay.
This has been PRN.FM. Hope you're having a great kickoff, soon to be kickoff, for Memorial Day weekend. Of course, I couldn't do this show without the fine folks around here, Jason, Giselle, Casey. Gary Noel's next. My name is Mark Farrell. If you want to book me for overcoming presentation on overcoming adversity, anti-bullying, drugs and alcohol, mental health, and more, go onto my website, markfarrellmotivation.com. That's Mark Farrell, F as in Frank, A-R-R-E-L-L, motivation.com. Really hope you have a great weekend, and see you next Thursday from 11 a.m. to noon Eastern Standard Time. This is PRN. Gary Noel's next.